Hey guys, it's your boy King Kelechi, and I'm here to tell you that the Anime's Most Wanted podcast contains a language that may be offensive to younger viewers. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode.
Hey, welcome back to Anime's Most Wanted, where we try to do an episode as long as our anime episode. I'm Mel, and I'm back with Diego, and we're doing part one and two of Bungo Stray Dogs episode 5 and 6. So yes, let's get into it. Diego.
So hi. Yeah. So first of all, I really thought that we were waiting, or we initially thought to wait, because we thought they were going to be like just two parts.
Yes. But yes, we did.
We had hopes. Being more than that. So we're gonna have to split this probably in part one, part two, and then I don't know, part three, part four, if there is part four.
It feels like it. Yeah, because they really now making a situational episodes. Mm-hmm. It feels like so. Every step is now gonna be an episode, and if it's gonna be like that, we're gonna be heartfelt to get an actual answer at the end of this season. yes. But yes, I particularly enjoyed these two episodes.
I think they were really cool, really cool in like different
light and day
area.
Night and day, yes. Not light and day, but night and day, these two episodes.
So let's just dive right in on the first episode, which is, I think, episode number 5.
At the Port in the Sky, part 1.
Yes. It could have easily been at the airport, because...
Yes.
Yeah. But the Port in the Sky sounds, I don't know, like more...
Poetic, I guess?
Mysterious. Yeah. More mysterious to what we get. Okay, so... We get some stuff going on from the agency side. We get that Atsushi arrives with Rampo at what appears to be the detective agency building, and they gather the whole team up there. I mean, the whole team, less Dasai, because Dasai is still in prison.
Yeah.
But they start talking about the real goal of the. Of the angels, more specifically, Kuchi.
Yep.
But I think there's the first thing that I want to talk about. It's interesting how Bo can recreate every single detail of the detective agency.
Right? Like, it was like amazingly exact.
Yeah, and then I think it's something that my wife got and I didn't, because I didn't really like pay attention to it, but. There's no word, at least as of now, on how they recruited back again Tanizaki and Kenji.
Hmm. Yep.
Like, they two just appeared in there, and we haven't seen them since they split on the tunnels.
Yes.
Back when they were being prosecuted.
I did not stop to think of that. Now I gotta go rewatch the episode.
There's actually no knowledge for now. Of how they survived, or how they escaped, and how they regrouped with everyone else. But something that hopefully I expect that we get information on. If not, I'm gonna be really sad. But
that's a big hole to leave, I guess. They're showing everyone's regrouping, but leave these two out. Like,
yeah, I mean, everyone almost died.
Yeah.
What if the other two were just like chilling there, hidden in a room?
Yeah, hanging out.
Yeah, so I hope they actually are going to answer this back there. But if not, it will be kind of sad. Going back, we learned that the actual goal of this plan is not like turn everyone into vampires per se. Or the creation of the humanity army, but instead Fukuchi getting hold of one of the like Secret, I think it was called Secret Powers, Secret
Weapons,
something like that. Which is called One Order or World Order?
One Order.
So One Order is a device that was created using abilities that allows whoever's controlling it to basically override the consciousness of whoever is subordinate and make the subordinate do whatever the user wants without even questioning it. Like, they even make this example that I really liked, Ramp asking the group of how many bullets does a soldier need in order to hit an opponent or enemy of the country, like army. And everyone is like 10, 50, I don't know, all round. And he's like actually 50,000?
Yeah, 50,000, something like that, yeah.
Because even if you're fighting for any, quote unquote, good cause, you're still making or feeling bad about killing someone in the heat of the battle. So you unconsciously avoid it. And with One Order, basically, your guilt is overridden and you will actually just act and kill with the less, with almost one or really way less bullets. So that's One Order. And so if the user gets One Order, or Pichi gets One Order, he will basically have world domination because he will control every single army, the vampires and everything. He will basically have control of the whole world.
Yeah. It's the one order part came at me with a block, because I'm like, aren't you already controlling at least a third of the humanity with the vampires, and that can change and that can multiply fast? Like, what's the use?
Yeah, but I think the next parts of this episode and the next one actually like kind of gives me at least for me the answer, which is you depend on Bram Stoker.
He doesn't want to depend.
You depend on him being alive. I think that's the greatest weakness, as Rumpel makes us note about it. So the plan of the agency is basically go and intercept or try to disrupt the delivery of One Order to an airport to Fukuchi. And that's the main plan, quote unquote, because the actual plan is just to lure out the hunting dogs to be able to retrieve and kill Bram Stoker.
Yep.
So yeah, they decide to attack the airport where they are going to receive the One Order, and the idea was just to make a truck explode, since they are considered terrorists, and that will make the ones carrying the One Order be like, hey, this is bad, we need to go away and turn around, so that it would delay the delivery of One Order a day or two and give the opportunity of the detective agency to heal Bram Stoker, right. And I think that was a magnificent plan, and I like how they make Fukuchi be pretty sure that the agency would discover where the One Order was going to arrive, because if I remember correctly, they were having the same operation, like multiplied, like what was it? 700? 70?
Yeah, 7. I think it was like, it was a lot of country. They rerouted the idea of where the One Order will stop. It would, they picked at least, I think, 6-7 different points.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It was a lot. And
were they going to deliver at the same time? Yeah. But Fukuchi was pretty sure that Rampo would make it out and discover that was the real place where the One Order was coming. So he had the hunting dogs in there defending the airport. And I think this is where the chapter, I mean, it was, the episode was really great up till now, but this is the point where I start to get like really invested in, for two main reasons. The first, how the plan was working, but Rampo, like, he, and you can see Rampo that he's really, really mad or serious about this. Like, we have never seen him before.
Yeah.
And that he really wants to destroy this this scheme with all his heart.
Yeah.
But he's bested by Piotr once again.
Yeah.
Because apparently, and I don't know if you got the same vibe, but with the revelation on the next episode about the Venom, I thought that like Nikolai killed the two, the drivers of the, mm-hmm. the pilots, because of how they, like,
yeah, they got like and the slowly the nosebleed and the thing, yeah.
Yeah. So so going forward, the chapter starts running up when the pilots try to escape because they saw the explosion, but they suddenly die.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what happened?
Yeah, like they start to bleed from everywhere, like eyes, ears, mouth, and God knows which other places.
Yeah. Thank they weren't that descriptive, at least.
Yeah, at least in the next episode, like, Gogol says, like, you start bleeding from every single pore and hole in your body.
Yeah. I'm like, gross.
Pretty gruesome, right?
Yeah. So, that part, right? So, we, again, this episode is, feels like it's like a, again, split in, even though it's in the same area now, the airport. It still feels like it's split into two pieces. The part where the One Order is the main, in between quotation marks, the main object, where everyone, the Hunting Dogs and Fuki, is like focused on there.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there's the part that, you know, happened in the room with Bram.
Yeah. So I think I skipped a little bit.
Yeah.
When we say that the pilots died, and I don't remember if that was part one or part two. If it was part two, I'm really sorry. But as you said, Mel, on the Hunting Dog side, like, they are waiting for the agency to make a movement, and they plan to eradicate them once and for all. But I think this is where Tsukichi makes a mistake, which is trying to get Jonah, our blind guy from the Hunting Dogs, into his actual scheme.
Yes.
So he takes him to a place back in the basement and finally reveals that he's the mastermind. He's the one who is behind the vampire outbreak and everything that has been going on, and that he wants to recruit them. He recruits him to his plan, to be a new member of the Gate of the Angels.
Yes.
But is and I had this fun conversation with my wife there, where I was telling her that I don't think that he's going to turn. He was like pretty sure that Jonah was going to join the
Gate
of the Angels. And I mean, we saw him noticing the heartbeat of Kuchi back there,
mm-hmm,
when Achihara.
Yep.
Made this scheme with the USB. So I was really thinking that he might done something, and luckily for me, I was right, and he turns into Fukuchi. Like, yeah, I was a criminal before you took me in into the Hunting Dogs, but you gave me the pleasure of saving people, so I won't let you get away with this. And the fight starts, and I don't know if I just misread or misremembered something, but I thought that he was like a one person with no abilities besides the operations or him being blind.
Ah, okay, no, yeah, because he never really showed his abilities other than his the sense thing, right?
Yeah, yep, exactly.
So, and it came to a big surprise that his ability was that good. Like, I was like, he's hiding that? Behind all that sense stuff, he's hiding that. I'm like, these Hunting Dogs are amazing.
Totally. And so the fight starts, and he's able to cut Fukuchi, but we know that he's broken and he's a cheater. So he takes out the sword and cuts the past to avoid him be getting damaged.
Yeah, I really every time he does that, I hate him a lot more. I think I'm annoyed by his powers. I'm annoyed by the sword.
Yeah, I'm like, pretty sure that has to be like some sorts of cheating.
It is. He's literally cheating. There's no other way.
But apparently, Kikuchi like had this every villain on this series. Every villain is a mastermind, so he was expecting Jono to be able to betray him. So he ends up using a vampire Akutagawa to block the exit of with a dimensional gate.
Mm-hmm.
So Jono cannot use his disintegration molecules or him turning into molecules to escape. Which I think it's pretty cool, but that's a new, at least for me, that's a new application of Rashomon. I did not consider like using it as a dimensional prison or some sorts.
Yeah. So there's so many things about that little fight only. Like the cheating again, like he had him. He was so close. So close. Secondly, Fukuchi always having a backup plan for the people he knows about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So him
Go ahead. I will say.
Okay. So whomever he reveals his plan to, he always has a plan for if they don't go with it or not. Because again, he's been in too many wars to be gullible into believing that people will just like go with him. Right. But.
Yeah.
What I found the most interesting about Jono not choosing to go to the dark side, because he said, you showed me the light of helping people. You changed me into a better person. How dare you be such an evil person?
Yeah.
And I felt his heartbreak in a way. Like he's like, come on, man! Like you, after all that I've been through and we've been through, and I've learned this new. Even though it's creepy, still it's still in. Like he doesn't express it in a regular humanistic way, Jono. The way he says the pleasure of saving people and the way he describes, you know, how and he does it and all that. But it's still a thing that he now yearns to uphold. And now he runs into the person he kind of looked up to that, you know, failed him in a way. You know?
And totally, and I think that's pretty interesting, right? Because at least from what we've seen, all the hunting dogs, except Tachihara, obviously, but all of them like looked really up when he was Fukuchi was a hero to them.
Correct. Yeah.
So this is like a great, great reason. And, yeah.
So that was the most important part of that episode, I thought. That didn't even sway Fukuchi in a way from, oh yeah, so I used to be, because in his head, he's doing good. He's doing good, but he has to break the rules and make things go his way, because his way is the good way, right?
Yeah.
And what he seems in his delusion and grandeur of what good is, for him, he keeps forgetting that other people have, like, you know, he doesn't forget, but he keeps hoping that people will just, you know, understand his way.
Yep, totally.
Because, I mean, like, why do he keep recruiting people, at least trying to recruit them? Because this is the third person that, you know... That is not
working. But I think in this case, I think in this case it was kind of understandable from a point where the hunting dogs are really broken, and he needed someone with that. At least for what it seems, like he was, like Jonah was willing to kill this little girl just because she knew the detective agency.
Yep.
So that's like a good way to show that he at least posed as someone who had no remorse or anything, and would protect or would carry out
the just cause. Yeah.
So that's why I think he tried to recruit him. But at the end, it was like, counterproductive.
Yeah. That. It was a next failed attempt, and the best part, also a next part of the episode that was interesting. Like I said before, Fukuchi seems to have backup plans for all the people he knows about, so all the variables that are known. Jono added an unknown variable to the mix, this the little girl that Aya, I think her name is, yes, who was saved by the detective agency and felt loyalty to them in a way, because you know they saved her, they helped her out, and all in all she was like, if this person is trying to help them, even though he looks and sounds and acts like he's not, she trusted it enough to go and follow his directions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now there's a variable this Fukuji hasn't thought about, didn't have plans for, and it throws him off.
And I think it's pretty interesting how Jono was able to slip this paper into or give this paper, his note, to this little girl, which you said was called how? Sorry.
Aya, I think her name is Aya, yes.
Aya, okay. So here, and gave her the note that follow me without being noticed. And somehow, knowing that she was going to do it, because, I mean, if I was in her place, I would probably not go and do and raise myself of doing anything like that.
Yeah. I think it's because also he could sense her, just like how he could sense something wrong with Fukuchi, with the, at the moment of the USB drive thing.
Mm-hmm.
He sensed her conviction to believing that the detective agencies are good people.
Yeah.
So he put all his hopes in this little girl. Like, I'm like,
yeah,
dude.
I think it was pretty great. And so going back to the fight, it was pretty interesting to see that Fukuchi's power. I mean, even though you can cut the past or space time or whatever, Jono's body like actively turns into molecules, so he's unable to be cut. And I think that's also a broken power, because how do you actually cut him if he's just going to turn into molecules? And I think that at least to me, that also feels like another counter of Fukuchi's ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think because his sword does, go through time and space, but only for variables he knows about.
Mm-hmm.
So this little girl is a blind spot.
Mm-hmm.
I hope, as it seems at the moment. So I liked that. Like there's still some hope that if an unmistakable variable just drops there, both Rampo and Fukuchi are now like because he looked, Fuguchi looked in that episode, he looked like not lost, but like he was losing control, because he seemed to have control of everything, right? So now this something that showed up, something he noticed, but he has no control, he has no backup plan, nothing, he's just slicing around like a madman, right?
Yep.
And you see the stoic, all powerful mask crumble for a couple of seconds, right?
And I think after the fight with Jono is where I actually see the first time of Fuguchi being like kind of sloppy. Like he does something that, on my view, was not like the most logical reason. Or the most logical course of action, sorry.
Yeah.
Because he, right when Aya was there, first of all, I don't know how she got into that room without being noticed. Or how she got there first. Because there's no other entrance besides the actual first entrance.
Yeah.
So how she got there, it's pretty much a plot hole for me. But right, she saw the whole fight. She saw Jono probably turning into a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And then she takes a picture. But first of all, how dumb you have to be to leave the flash on when you know you have to take a covered picture?
Yeah, but the thing is, funny enough, I had the same thing today. Someone was showing me something, and I was like, ooh, that looks like something I can make. Let me take a picture of it, right? And I took a picture and the flash goes off and I'm like, why is my flash on again? And then, you know, because you put it on once and you just forget. It's just a thing. I understood then her panic. Like, God damn it, my flash is on. Now my flash is on. Yeah,
and I mean, I get that it's like that, like it could happen, and it happens to people. But I mean, if you're on a life or death
situation, but she's a child again, a child. But as we now like keep hanging in this, let's go to the next episode because it gets interesting in a nice and funny way, I find. That episode.
Yeah, just to end up this episode, Aya takes the picture. Fuguchi tries to get her, but, and this is the sloppy error I told you. If you have the power to turn every single thing into a weapon with 100 or 1,000 of times more power than it actually has, why didn't he use a chair or, I don't know, something else and just hit the wall? You can, like, go through the wall and actually kill her without needing to do that all he did. But Fuguchi jumps in, and as he jumps in, Aya comes out of the door, hides outside of the room, and that's like that was for me like the first sloppy error of Fuguchi, because if you cannot risk yourself, you just kill everything that it's or destroy everything that it's out on that little room.
That is true. So the you thought he could have at least like crumbled that room with everything in it. But again, so, I'm not saying that moment of the panic of not having a variable he didn't plan for. I think that's what it was, maybe. But you're right; it was sloppy, though. Like, it, you know.
And so, finally, to end the episode, Fuguchi starts looking through the room. He does not find the girl Aya. But he actually doesn't know who it is. And Aya is like, oh, damn, I'm hiding here. I cannot run away. And he's coming back. He's going to walk to where I am and notice me. And basically that's where our episode ends. And we go to at the port in the sky, part 2.
Yes. Part 2. Again, so the One Order is now, you know, on its way. not has been delivered. Not technically, it hasn't been delivered. It just dropped in his in his hand.
And I think that's pretty like badass because Kikuchi went out of the room because he thought that there was no one there. And we later learned that Aya hit herself on Bram Stoker's coffin.
Yep.
Anyway, Kikuchi runs away because the explosion happened and he goes to make sure that one another gets to his hands. And as you said, one another basically falls into his hands because the pilots were dead, the plane was about to crash, and then the other guy, Tetsu...
Like, he literally sliced that plane up like sushi.
Yeah, basically... I think it's called Techo. But well, this guy, this hunting member, the one that we know that can extend his fur, basically just cuts the whole plane into bits without cutting the One Order. Even though the seat where One Order was completely destroyed.
Right.
But One Order was completely protected. One Order falls to the ground and coincidentally just falls into Kikuchi's hands. And that's actually at that point I did think that it was kind of lost already.
that move was awesome. I was like, that is high level again. Broken ability in a way to just be able to extend your sword and then not only extend it, it's still very strong enough to cut through metal and to cut through metal so fast that it can slice a whole plane up in bits. Well, it was big chunks, but still enough to, you know, that it won't make like a terribly big crash, but multiple small crashes. Right, so that was amazing. Right,
it totally was.
It was, and so you get that part. You get the part where, in the Bram is I is hiding in Bram's coffin. I found that very chilling in the first glimpse.
And then actually turned into something really funny.
Yes, and that was one of my favorite. Their interaction was my favorite part of the whole couple of episodes. After all I've just seen and all the fighting and all the badass moves, her connection with Bram is this most irritatingly sweet thing.
It was really, really funny. And I mean, so to give context, as we said, Aya hit herself into Bram's coffin, and then suddenly Bram wakes up and he's like, with all his like ominous language, saying like, "Who dares disturb my sleep and my coffin and blah blah blah. Do you know who I am? I'm the Count of the Darkness and I'm the blah 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 blah." You know, whole set of giver jabber,
whole set of information about himself that does make no sense for anyone. Would never make any sense for a girl, I think, but can be older than what, 11, 10, 11, 12 maybe?
Yeah, she's 10.
Yeah, oh, she's 10.
10. And so, she's 10. Like, and I love it because she's like, "What? What did you say?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Damn, well, already this was already tiring. I will go back to sleep." And she ends up trying to get information from him and basically stealing Bram from his coffin.
Yes, it was kind of like, what is she gonna do? And she calls him Bra-chan, and I was like, oh my god, that is so cute.
So, it was pretty good. Like, but yeah, Bra-chan. So she takes Bram and uses him as a backpack, running away from that room. when Fukuchi comes back with the One Order already, he realizes that Bram is gone and suddenly calls, like, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 vampires that were already like be like located on the airport, and tell them to close the airport and start looking for Bram and for whoever took Bram. We see that Aya is trying to escape, but the vampires who already have the oil entrance is already blocked. Bram, she's like, hey, please help me to do something with these vampires. He once again he starts with a jibber jabber about with this English that it's so ominous that she does not understand. But he has like, yeah, I can help you, but I have a request that I'm pretty sure that you would not be able to comply. And I thought it was going to be something more interesting, but basically,
yeah, I thought it was going to be something like really that she had to really like go and find or understand, or she might not have any understanding of it. But in the end, he just wanted some freaking music from a radio or a player.
Yeah, he basically asked for this mythical box where you can get music every single moment of the day and everything. And yeah, called a radio.
When he said it, I laughed. I was like, "This is too funny."
I love how Aya goes like, "Wait, radio? Like, I think my dad had one. I don't have one, but and Bram is like, yeah, I knew you would not be able to get me my radio, so I won't help you." And she's like, "But I have this." And suddenly she plugs her headphones into Bram's ears. And it starts showing him music. Like, yeah, I have these, and you can. This like are like radio stations. You can hear them 24/7. And if you pay for a subscription, you can have more. And yeah. Bram is like, Bram even questions like, "Are you a goddess or something?"
Yeah, because you're
gave
mythical.
Me more than I expected.
it was the most heartfelt interaction. This man of many terrors and murders just wants to hear some music, and she shows him the world of the internet and an MP3 player or a phone or whatever, and now he's like, "All right, you're a goddess, I'm gonna help you."
Yeah, and I'm waiting to see what we get from their interaction in the future. But just to go back to Fukuchi, he basically couldn't use One Order even though he had it, because in theory, he would get it, but Ango was able to convince the United Nations that they don't simply handle a weapon like that to anyone. So just get a safe that with an ability you lock the box, so it can only be used on certain conditions. Yep. Which in this case was when the vampire army actually attacks. And that's why Fukuchi came back to get Bram, because he wanted to use Bram and order the vampires to attack. We started attacking many countries, so he could use One Order. And then we get the thing of Aya escaping with Bram and everything. And I think we only got one more scenario that we didn't talk on the previous episode, and I think it was genius, and it's going to be pretty interesting because this was my favorite part of the episode. And is we get Theodore in that side action. Once again,
yes.
They are all bored. Like, yeah, this has turned boring because we are both masterminds and we are, you know, doing our stuff, and this is already boring. So why don't we go skip to the part when one kills the other?
Yeah. And like what?
And they're both like, yeah, let's just kill each other. And they are suddenly transported outside. And we see that Sigma and Gogol are there.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to help you because you're my best friend, but I also want to kill you because you're my best friend. So, since I can't make both, I will force you to do this kind of weird competition. And he even apologizes to Dasai about getting...
Yeah, having to involve him. Yes.
But basically, the competition is they both will get the Venom that I'm pretty sure that was used against the pilots. But this venom is the one that in 30 minutes you start bleeding out of every single pore of your body and you die. And and the idea is what they, Fyodor and Nadasa, have to get out of the prison in the time limit. And the first one to do it will get the antidote, and the one that does not will dies in a pretty gruesome way. And but I mean, Nadasa and Fyodor are really, really thrilled.
They were giggling and like having a competition about who's gonna like even the before the competition of dying, they're like who's gonna inject themselves first and who's gonna win, and I found it very, very funny that Sigma is in there wondering if he's the only sane person around.
Yeah, that was just what I was about to say. Like, Sigma even wonders, like, yeah, I know that my origins are not like a normal human and I was created this other way, but am I the only sane person in here?
Yeah,
and, well, and I think that was pretty funny.
Yes, he is. And, yes. For all the smarts and you know, theory thingy smarts, Daza and Fyodor are crazy. and then add Nikolai's chaotic craziness to this is a match made in hell.
So,
go ahead.
Be the best. But yeah, I think that was all that happened.
Yep.
Which one was better for you, part one or part two?
So seeing Jono's ability for me was like the highlight of part one. And the highlight for me of part two is, like I said, weirdly enough, Aya and Bram's interaction, right? Because all these adults are out here doing fuck shit all over the place, and this little girl is trying to get this being, this ancient being, because he's, you know, a couple of centuries old, right? If I'm not right, correct. To help her save her friends and get the bad guys put away, and the way she endears him, even though he tries to be all this, I'm this godly person, I have these powers, fear me, and she's like, I just want to help you, and he's like, I don't know what to do with that. It's so cute, and yes, you know, all the other craziness around all of that makes that moment so much better for me. Like all the violence, all the chaotic suicide things that's going on with, you know, Fyodor and Dazai. That's technically what that is. And the whole powers of the hunting dogs is this non-ability little girl doing most of the work now. It's so cute and I love it. So I can't wait for the next episode.
I agree. I think that the next episode will be pretty interesting. I'm really hoping to see what comes of Bram and what comes of the Dazai and Fyodor tweet, because I think those two are really cool. But yeah, I think, in my opinion, the second episode was better because
it had more.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as we said, we wanted to bring the whole airport incident in just one bit, but apparently it's going to be
more. Apparently, they said no. So the next, we're gonna keep an eye out for the next episode, and if it gives the feeling of two-parter again, we're gonna do it again in two parts, because again the story just links up better for my opinion, and also time-wise for us gives us people who have full-time jobs to be able to catch up and watch stuff. So thanks again for coming to listen to our discussion and review and all of Bunga Stray Dogs. And I hope you enjoy our two-parter. And see you again in maybe 2 weeks, in maybe a week. I will let you know on the socials. So follow us on Instagram, aka what used to be Twitter, and I think TikTok. But just check out our socials. Look for us a.m.w. Anime Most Wanted. Diego, tell the people where they can find
you. Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter/X as at Cerulean Sniper. There we can talk about anime, movies, manga, yes, whatever you want. And basically that's my only public social media.
Yeah, and you can just, you know, find our handles in the show notes, so and in the show links. Again, until next time, bye.
Yeah, have a nice one. Bye bye.